The reading this morning, it comes from Clara Barton. And if you were here last week, you saw our kids got their first of their Unitarian Universalist Heroes trading cards. They got a Clara Barton trading card. We talked a little bit about her. And I want to say before I'll get into the sermon as well that you may hear me at times refer to only Unitarians or only Universalists. And that's because until 1961, we were two different denominations. So if you're confused, that's what's going on. So Clara Barton said on Memorial Day in 1879, "Yes, it is over. The calls are answered, the marches are ended, the nation saved, and with the glory of gladness in her eyes, the shine of victory on her brow, our nation covers her tear-stained face with grief-bowed head. Sits humbly down in the ashes of her woe, to mourn her loss, to weep her dead. Decorated graves, white May blossoms of 1879. Who lays a flower on those little lost graves today? Who on the thousands and thousands like them all through the land? 13,000 dead in one prison. 300,000 dead in one war, dead everywhere. On every battlefield, in the dark ravines of the tangled forest, in the miry poison swamps. There on their strange beds they sleep, till the morning of great reverie. They sleep and we remember." Last week, really just a few days ago, our country honored the 40th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War tested Unitarian Universalism. There are stories from all over the country of people crying and fighting openly about the war in our church sanctuaries on Sunday morning. Churches split. People stopped attending over disputes about the Vietnam War. And some of our churches offered sanctuary for conscientious objectors and even held ritual services for burning draft cards. And some of our congregations made it a priority to support families whose sons had been drafted and to support returning veterans. In our churches, people who disagreed over the war struggled to live together, struggled to hold one another in community. The Unitarian Universalist congregation I grew up in South Carolina, had a number of veterans who attended regularly. And the more I think about it, I don't remember hearing them talk about being veterans or about the experiences they had while they were at church. A guy from my youth group ended up joining the Army after he graduated from high school, and I remember hearing all the adults whispering, "Oh, what a shame it was." When the Iraq War started, folks in my home congregation came to church all dressed in black, and we lit candles and we read poems and prayers for peace. And there was a heavy sense of sadness and anxiety in the room. And then almost 10 years later, I was working with a congregation on Long Island, and a woman approached me after service and said, "Could we talk privately?" And I said, "Sure." And she said, "You know, I support the war in Iraq. My son is in the military, but I don't feel like I can share that here at church and be held and loved." At the Unitarian Universalist congregation in Portland, Oregon, they have a tradition where when a student is ready to graduate from high school, they stand up in front of the congregation and tell everyone what their plans are. And a lot of people say, you know, here's where I'm going to college, and may even have an idea of what they want to study. In 2009, a young man named Derek Rush stood up and he said the following to his congregation, and this was later published in the UU World, our magazine. He said, "The fifth principle states the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. In my life, my conscience has led me to my lifelong dream of becoming a soldier." Derek went on to say, "I have been asked many times why I would volunteer to potentially kill people. That if I really wanted to help people, I should join the Peace Corps. And why would I be willing to go halfway around the world to fight in a war that I may not agree with or understand? And I wanted to make the people who asked me these questions understand that I was joining to support and defend the Constitution. That I was joining because I felt a duty to give back to a society that had given me so much. Opportunity, education, peace. That I didn't want to kill people or be sent into harm's way. That what I was going to do was not out of hate, but love." Derek told his congregation he longed to serve. That is, to put the needs of others before his own. He longed to live his faith by committing to something bigger than his individual needs. And all of this in my life, reflecting on all these things, has made me wonder, what does Unitarian Universalism tell us about war? In times of war, how does our faith tell us to respond? Derek Rush cited the fifth principle of Unitarian Universalism. Our sixth principle is in part what complicates the question of what our faith tells us to do in times of war. Our sixth principle says that as Unitarian Universalists, we share the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. And looking back over Unitarian Universalist history, it seems our forebears have always struggled with how to make peace and justice compatible. And we must ask ourselves, can we have peace without justice? That is, can there be peace if we do not have equal rights as human beings? Or what will justice be worth without peace? That is, what will the equal rights for all human beings be worth if we destroy each other in the process of getting there? When we consult how our Unitarian Universalist forebears responded in times of war, they seem to be struggling with these same questions. And before I delve into our history, I want to give you a definition of pacifists and pragmatists according to Reverend John Burens, who used to be the president of the Unitarian Universalist Association. In Buren's words, pacifists believe participation in the military and the use of violence are never justified, whereas pragmatists tend to believe that the use of force is justifiable only when it reduces the possibilities of violence in the world, is consistent with international law, minimizes the impact on civilians, and employs force proportional to the danger being encountered. So pacifists and pragmatists. Now there are a significant number of peace activists in our tradition. Universalist Benjamin Rush was pro-Revolutionary War. He also signed the Declaration of Independence. After the war, in 1793, Rush wrote to his new government with a plan for a peace office. Rush requested that a Secretary of Peace be appointed, that this Secretary establish and maintain free schools and include in their curricula the veneration of human life and the horror of shedding human blood. He asked that teaching about the instruments of death be avoided, that militia laws should be repealed, and to do away with military dress and titles and abolish all military parades. Unitarian Ralph Waldo Emerson spoke out passionately to denounce the Mexican-American War. The United States was fighting Mexico for what is now Texas, among other things. And Emerson believed that it was immoral, arrogant, and cruel to occupy and then take land that wasn't ours. In an 1838 speech to the American Peace Society, Emerson described war as an epidemic insanity, breaking out here and there like the cholera, infecting men's brains instead of their bowels. But a few decades later, our Unitarian Universalist forebears were faced with a dilemma. How to honor the tradition of peace taught by their faith, while also upholding the tradition of believing in the worth and dignity of every human being. And I'm referring, of course, to the Civil War. Unitarians and Universalists threw themselves into the Civil War. While many of our forebears were pro-peace, they were also anti-slavery. Theodore Parker and two other Unitarians, total of three, were part of John Brown's Secret Six. The Secret Six helped to plan a raid on the federal armory at Harper's Ferry in what was then Virginia. And the plan was to get weapons to supply with people who were enslaved in the South so they could have an armed uprising. Our forebears saw the Civil War as divine retribution for slavery. It was referred to as the Holy War. Unitarian minister Thomas Wentworth Higginson served as the colonel of the 1st Black Battalion. Has anyone ever seen the movie Glory? That's him. Unitarian Julia Ward Howe wrote the Battle Hymn of the Republic. Howe wanted the Union Army to know God was on their side. He has sounded forth the trumpet that will never call retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on. Ralph Waldo Emerson committed himself to the war to end slavery, despite, if you recall, having previously called it an epidemic insanity. Unitarians and Universalists agreed that slavery was a violent institution that denied the worth and dignity of human lives. They agreed that such a violent, degrading institution must be ended no matter the cost. Writer Nathaniel Hawthorne accused Emerson of breathing slaughter like the rest of us. And Emerson's daughter, Ellen, is said to have responded, "There are some things worse than war. There are some things better than peace. There are some things worse than war. There are some things better than peace." And that's always the problem, isn't it? When we think about the millions of Jewish women, children, men, gays and lesbians, political resistors being killed during the Holocaust, Rwanda, people in Syria being gassed. That is the question we are left with. Are there some things worse than war? And I can picture our forebears trying to figure out what their faith called them to do in the 19th century. What did our Unitarian and Universalist faith demand of them? What action should define who we are and prove what we believe? Universalist Clara Barton was in solidarity with the Union soldiers. She ate the same food they did. She slept in the same conditions, risking her life daily on the battlefield, trying to heal wounded soldiers. And she did this because she believed in ending slavery. She put abolition even ahead of her own rights as a woman. Yet, as we heard Clara Barton say in the opening reading, there is a deep spiritual cost to to war. She said, "Our nation covers her tear-stained face. With grief-bowed head sits humbly down in the ashes of woe to mourn her loss, to weep her dead." The dilemma between peace and justice, how to have both, haunted the Unitarian and Universalist who served in the Civil War. During World War I, many of our ministers spoke out with a pacifist voice denouncing the war, and our denomination, I'm very sorry to tell you, actually removed those ministers from their pulpits for being pacifist. But World War II, I wish I had time to talk about all of the stories from our faith that come from World War II. Our chalice symbol actually comes out of World War II, so that'll be another sermon someday. But all I will say for now is that during World War II, most Unitarians and Universalists consulted the wisdom of peace and justice running through their tradition and saw no other choice but to tear themselves in two directions: fighting a war for the well-being of humanity, mourning the loss of humanity that always results from war. War and military service have often been glorified by religions, cultures, and governments. This is not about glorifying war. This is about acknowledging that Unitarian Universalists serve and have served in the military. And it's about remembering that their service is compatible with our faith. This is about bringing to light the conversation between pacifists and pragmatists that has been alive in our religious tradition for centuries. I had the opportunity to interview a number of Unitarian Universalist service members when I lived in the DC area. And I asked them how their Unitarian Universalist faith had shaped their military service. I spoke with a man who was actively serving in the Army at that point, who talked about how powerfully he felt our interconnectedness, our shared humanity, as he got to know the people of Afghanistan. A Unitarian Universalist who had served in the Navy talked about going out of his way to make sure that the handful of women who attended his academy felt welcomed and respected, at least by him. A woman serving in the Coast Guard talked about supporting a friend who was accused of being gay when the military held that to be a crime. And they explained something else to me. As a woman serving in the Army put it, "You'll find most service members are more dove than hawk." There is something that is well known in military families that isn't pointed out very often. What we learn when we talk more to people who serve in the military is that they don't like war. They aren't huge fans of violence and destruction. And it makes sense. If you are in the military, chances are you or the people you work with, your friends, are most likely to be harmed most by war. Unitarian Universalists who serve in the military and Unitarian Universalists who don't are united by a hope for peace and justice the world over. Our religion protects the right of conscience. If your conscience tells you that you are a pacifist, if your conscience tells you that you are a pragmatist or a mixture of the two, this faith invites you to be true to your conscience. And if we stay in conversation with one another, especially about the things we disagree on, this sanctuary will always be a place of comfort and growth for pacifists and pragmatists alike. May it be so. Blessed be. Amen.